I'm Kevin Davis, and this is the Catholic Family Podcast, and I'm joined by Father Stephen McKenna, a good friend to the show, who, as we all know by now, takes on the most difficult topics that we have. He really is, I don't know the right name for you, Father, maybe trooper, doing the dirty work, which I greatly appreciate. And I really think that there are priests out there as well who maybe listen to this podcast every now and then, who also appreciate you taking the hits and really, again, doing the work that nobody else wants to do. Because really, we cover some of the harder topics, some of the things that people kind of think, oh, let's maybe, you know, stay away from that a little bit. And today, we're going to cover one of those, and that is racism. And it came to my mind because I recently, today, read an article on Fox News that is titled, BLM Leader Endorses Trump for 2024, Accuses Dems of Racist Policies. Quote, unquote, we are not stupid. And I know Father and I both don't want to get too much into the political spectrum and into Trump and, you know, all this different stuff. I think it is an interesting article. I think it's an interesting idea that these black people are starting to say, oh, wait a second, the Democrats don't have our best interests at heart. And well, they haven't for probably, 100 years. And I think that is a very interesting topic that which Father and I may comment on. But I think we also want to get into the deeper issues of racism as a whole. What does that mean for Catholics? And what does it mean to be a white supremacist or to love my people more than everybody else, I suppose. And it's kind of these issues, hopefully Father will help us cover today. So Father, after that long introduction, thank you very much for joining. And I don't know, where do you want to start with this whole racism issue? Do you want to talk about the Democrats? Do you want to talk about racism in general?
Well, I think it's important that we realize that orange lives even matter now. So that's a good reality. So,
fair point. We don't pick and choose here, Father. They're all good.
Exactly. So the funny thing is, I was saying as like a segue from the last time we recorded it, there's another like good example of like Hegelianism, this BLM organization, which is a strategically created communistic organization, which was devised for the very purpose of trying to promote this false agenda to create a narrative of systemic racism in the world, to cause chaos and defund police departments and sow seeds of anarchy and to fight against the wicked orange man Donald Trump. Like, these are all like the supposed reality to that. This is why the BLM came into existence. And then now it's pro Donald Trump, and you look at it and say, like, between those two sides, the Democrats and the Republicans, what has changed? Nothing has changed. And yet, the conflict before went towards one synthesis, which is, that is to say that, sowing anarchy and rebellion and all these things. And now it seems like some of the people, at least supposedly anyways, are like, wait a second, this other team is the good team, which will change the color of our hats, and we'll, I think it's a whole bunch of, we'll see what the control of the narrative to come out of it is, but I don't think it's an altruistic change in BLM as an organization.
I found it interesting. This guy quoted at some point, I forget where it was, but he said something about how the Democrats are against black society and the nuclear family, which I thought was pretty interesting, because as you said, exactly, I know for sure the Black Lives Matter organization is like expressly against the nuclear family. Like I think, yes, that was in their bylaws type of a thing. Like, that was actually what they're against. So it is a very interesting thing. It's like, okay, is this under new leadership? I think it is. I think at least one of the ladies who founded it ended up committing fraud and buying a couple mansions, and I think she's in prison, at least if I remember correctly. So, yeah, I know. What? Not altruistic? What? Not in it for the greater good? Man, who would have thought?
Yeah, no. But I do think is probably a little bit in reaction to, like, I don't know who's in charge now, if whatever. I doubt that there's anything, like I said, altruistic or honest about this whole entire switch. What I do imagine that it comes from is that I think that you're seeing a wave of people in the Black community that are truly realizing they've been sold a bill of goods for a long time. And it's exactly that, the destruction of the nuclear family. It is the willful, the deliberate oppression of them societally so that they can be more easily manipulated and controlled. It is the regularity of violence in their own communities. It is the regularity of drug difficulties and, you know, fractured homes and everything like that. And I think they are realizing that these are the, where are you finding all of these problems most prolifically happening? In leftist cities. And, you know, where you have, and you have, it's one of those things, like, I mean, whether he actually did any good or not is a different question, but at least public statement wise, what Trump talked about regularly was the meeting, wanting to make changes in Black communities to better educate them, give them more job opportunities, and help them to actually move up in social standing so that this situation started to change, and that the violence and things like that would come to a close. Like I said, whether anything was actually done about it or not is a different question, but at least the words were there. And I think there is a general sort of weighing up of a lot of these people to say, like, wait a second, this is, we've been being, you know, kind of pushed under the rug for a long, long time now. And
and things really got to a head under Obama, right? I mean, I think nobody can deny now that the race issues really came to an extreme point, I guess, since the 1960s, I suppose. But I mean, in recent years, they got to a head with him. But I think that because he was also Black and charismatic and all these different things, it was a lot easier to just not see that he was actually causing a lot of this, you know, the trouble in his government was. And then Trump came along, and as you said, I don't know what he actually did, but it made people think a little bit differently. And now Biden's back and it's like, okay, wait a second. Yeah. Something really is wrong with this party, and they have been mistreating us for a long time.
Exactly. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, when you start pushing the woke culture stuff of, and like Black lives and Black communities are lumped in with LGBT stuff and, you know, all these, fluidity of love garbage that is out there, the Black community members look at that and go, whoa, wait a second. It's like, you're promoting all this like atheism and, you know, weird forms of quote unquote family and all this. And you like the, when you look at it as a group, if we could sort of like large cluster generalization of it, you know, they certainly have their issues, but their issues at least usually fall in line with the natural law. You know, that they, you know, yeah, they might jump around, like guys might jump around from lady to lady, but at least they're jumping around to ladies and not to other guys. And they're not, there's not a huge wave of, you know, Black transsexuals out there, or there's, you know, and most Blacks, you know, they might, you know, not, they might have their issues, but they at least believe in God, you know, and they at least, you know, are some form of Christian usually, and things like that. It's like that aspect of it is sometimes you can just go too far. And, you know, and how much, you know, again, how much time have they just, it's eventually somebody has to realize that, you know, they've all been sort of, you know, taking a laugh at us and holding us down intentionally. And, you know, nobody's going to change it unless we do it. And it's not the, you know, the people that they are saying who it is, the people that are in your neighborhood, that's not who's the racist out there. And they are all starting to realize that, like, they, you know, when I go to the store and, you know, the checkout clerk calls me sir and, you know, hands me my change back, and I go to the car wash place and that guy's very nice, and, you know, I've got friends at school, and I've got, in like, nobody seems to be racist around me. So who really, where is this systemic racism coming from? And you have to start wondering, if you can't find it in your neighborhood like they want you to, then where is it, you know?
So. Right. And so I guess, I mean, Father, as you said, that there is more crime and poverty, I think, in a lot of these places. And I think a lot of that's exactly as you say, it's because it's liberally run. But I think it does, there's something culturally, you know, wrong too, I suppose. There's something going on that is an issue. But I think that because of that, you have people, you know, your white supremacists who do come out and say, well, see, here's a perfect example. See, look at this. Look at the crime. Look at all the issues. We are superior to them. We are better than them. And I guess that's something I wanted to talk to you about, because I think that's...
Yeah. I think what you have to look at, though, is with that is, what is the root cause of it? It's certainly not their skin color, right? It is caused by, it is an environmental cause. And it's, you know, it's a complex one that is not going to be completely summed up in this, you know, it's impossible to completely sum up in this, but some of the largest contributing factors are poverty and poor education and broken homes. And it's, when you look at it, the broken home really contributes to the worst of the effects, because some of those other things, the poor education and poverty and the poverty, you know, those are largely oftentimes result of, as well, of having that fractured home. So we need to look honestly, where does that really come from? Because when you look back into the times when, like, the civil rights movement, say, like the 1960s, if you look at that, honest statisticians would tell you that the divorce rate in white communities was higher than it was in black families at that time. And then you had this shift. What transpired? Well, one of the largest realities was the 1980s and into the 90s, this when you developed the war on drugs. And all of a sudden, minor drug offenses became what was punishable by huge prison terms. And so if you had a little bit of marijuana, then you could be thrown away for a long period of time. If you had multiple offenses against it, you know, what is it, the old three strikes you're out rule for it, that, you know, third strike for possession of marijuana, and you could go to prison for the rest of your life, you know, for something that we are now as a society basically legalizing almost across the board, and realizing, and even in states where it's illegal, you know, it might as well be, it's basically not even as bad as a speeding ticket, you know, to, in those places, to have small quantities of marijuana. But for an entire generation, you had all of these things being enforced, and they weren't driving around the Hamptons looking for people smoking weed. They were driving around Compton, and they were driving around, you know, LA, and they were driving around Chicago and New York and doing these things. And I mean, go back. I mean, if you grew up, when I grew up, I'm sure if you had TV in the home, you probably watched Cops, the TV program Cops. Go back and look at old, you can find like old 1990s Cops videos, like Cop Show online. And it's almost all like these kids that are, or young men who are, like, they're out on the street and cops running after them, slamming them down on the pavement, slamming them into cars, arresting them and throwing them away for drugs. And it's like, mm-hmm. like, come on, like, this is what we're doing. And what you ended up having is creating this entire generation where most of the men that they knew were locked away, and the women then were more promiscuous because they didn't have their men around, and then they started having more children by more men, and none of them ended up being around because a lot of them ended up in these drug program prisons, and you had an entire generation of kids who grew up without a father, and that's what was so detrimental, and that's where you got your gangs and your gang violence from largely. That these kids grew up, no father, mom oftentimes not home, and oftentimes coming from bad family situations, and they would go out and they would find, this is the first group of people with older people who looked at me and treated me like they cared for me, you know. I mean, it's not something that I just say as in like, this is, you know, my summarization or my guess. You know, it's something that, you know, I studied when I was in college. I have a degree in criminal justice, and it's something that I know from firsthand experience in dealing with some of these people that were, you know, talking with some of these people that were gang members and things like that. And, you know, I've talked to them and, you know, people that I visited in prison as a priest. And, you know, it's, or people that I've known who have converted from, you know, that lifestyle and then have become Christian Catholic or anything like that. And it was, the common thread in those people is like, yeah, I didn't have a good life growing up. I didn't have good family life. Oftentimes, you know, really, really sad family life. And the first people that they could felt like they could look up to because they were in their neighborhood. And they were the older people in their neighborhood. And when they came around, they were welcomed in and they were treated like they were, for the first time, like they had somebody that cared about them. And that's why they could get wrapped up in a gang. And then they would mistakenly, as young people, as teenagers, who we all do stupid stuff when we're teenagers, they would get robbed, you know, get wrapped up in the gang, and then they'd have to commit crimes. And then next thing you know, the problem perpetuates itself. So if you're looking for a cause for these things, it really is societal in that way, you know. And because when you look at areas of that have similar things to them but have a different demographic of people, it's a similar reality. I mean, go to, you know, the trailer parks of Appalachia, right? Or then this in the back country of the South somewhere, whatever. You end up having mostly white people, but what do we refer to them as? White trash.
White trash, right? Yeah.
And what do? The same thing. They do drugs, they sell drugs, they don't get educated, they speak poorly, they get violent, they have kids out of wedlock, they have kids with multiple different people, they're absent as fathers, and they have the same problems. So it's just it's not as you know, that's in a trailer park in the country in Alabama or something like that. That's not in a city, in an inner city of Chicago, you know, with millions of people. So, you know, same problem, same results, but it gets overlooked largely because of that. And then we think, well, these black people, they, you know, just cause these problems, you know, and it's like, no, right. That's not the case. There's so much more to it than just that. You know, I mean, again, it's like, people's eyes would be open if they just traveled some, you know what I mean? Like, so much of that is a reality. Travel some, get out of the country, go, or even in the country, but go to different places and and see that reality is vastly different. You know, I had just seen something the other day about how after World War II, there was a number of GIs that had married and stayed in Germany after the war. And a number of them were African Americans that had done so. And then they had married German ladies and they had kids in Germany. And they were looking at the statistics of like African Americans in America and then like the children of these African Americans over in Germany and that atmosphere in which they grew up in. The number, like all of the stigmas that were against them in the U.S. didn't exist. And, you know, that way of, you know, kind of slang talking and lazy talking and that way of prone towards violence or having lower test scores and things like that, that all disappeared once you changed the environment that they were in and they were getting afforded a different environment, different opportunities. And, you know, the funny thing is a lot of those aspects that we could attribute to, you know, to sort of like that, like Black culture in America as like a negative type of thing. A lot of those actually originated with, you know, lower class white people too. So it's, you know, it's such a narrow look at it, and we don't want to, you know, it's the lowest hanging fruit. It's the lowest common denominator.
Exactly. Well, I think as you said, Buzz, it's kind of like the Hegelian, as you said, it's like you have to choose, you know, no, here it is. Here's, you know, it's because they're Black. It's because they're white. This is the problem they want you to fight. But I think maybe Father, maybe it was in a private conversation that you and I were talking about this, with the, you know, immigration, it may have been with somebody else as well. We're talking about immigration in Europe. And it's like, well, you know, there's not a problem if people, you know, can come in and it's not about the color of the skin. It's not about, you know, how you join a country or who comes in. But if you allow in a million immigrants, it's not even just the language or the color that's the problem. Obviously, you get into the issue with religion, et cetera. But, you know, you get everyone blaming these people for coming in and as someone saying, oh, they're taking over our society. Our Western society is being overthrown and overrun. And say, well, what about the point that white people don't have kids anymore? I mean, what about the point where we don't care about our society or our values, you know, the values that we should have in religion and faith and family. And instead people have, you know, white people, Americans, Germans, we have what, 1.2 children per family or something, while the Muslims have 10. What do you expect? Yeah. Of course they're going to come and conquer. I mean, so I think we oversimplify everything.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then on top of it, I mean, think about like since 2020, all the problems that we've had with society between COVID and the stripping of our rights and the institution of mandatory vaccinations and the people, so much has been done away with from us and all by these, you know, leaders, so-called leaders that are over top of us. Well, people wake up. That's the largest destruction of our society. They're dividing us and trying to destroy us. And look around at all the, you know, all the faces that you see that are there making these decisions. They're the old Watts. You know, I mean, it's Kool and the Gang ain't running Congress. You know, it really is. If you want to, like, you know, we can't simplify things as race. Yeah, I mean, are there things, and that's also saying we don't ignore race either. You know, like, it's, we don't look at, you know, you don't look at and say, like, that, you know, I'm just going to walk down the street as a white guy, you know, with my sweater tied around my waist, and, you know, my khakis on, just going down the street in, you know, in Harlem, and expect good things to happen. You know what I mean? Like, not going to go into the, like, the combat zone in Miami and, you know, expect to have that just be an uneventful afternoon or evening, you know, or whatever it is. It's, you know, but it's a more of a tell. It's, you know, it's, you know, like you recognize that these things, as a, we recognize that these, there are these stigmas and stereotypes out there, and that they do exist for a reason. But there is the reason that violent crime amongst Blacks is higher, due to them being Black people, or is it due to other circumstances that have come in? And I think that's where you have to, it has to be looked at, not, you know, not the, in any way, shape, or form that. And I think largely people understand that. I don't think people sit around going like, oh, like too many people are out, not too many people are out there, like all the Blacks are gonna rob your liquor store and all the Hispanics are gonna, you know, they're all illegal and they're all going to, you know, hijack your car or something like that. Or, you know, I don't think that that is a necessarily a reality amongst people. I think where we end up being more so now is sort of this false reactionary to it, and this false application towards it too. And probably a good example would be for you, Kevin, like when you, because my thing on it is what we are seeing in these, this aspect is the system causing problems, or like the but also a recognition that the benefits, it's a confusion of race with culture. I think that that's where
exactly,
like, yeah. A racial, and I think it's a more particularly an American problem than it is elsewhere in the world,
from my experience. Yes.
Yeah. And because the reality of it is, and this is why it's such a low-hanging fruit and it's embraced really largely, you know, by people who aren't thinking. Oftentimes it's young people who don't have life experience and don't, you know, young adults, you know, in their early 20s or something like that, think that this is what it means to be conservative, that embrace this idea. But it's, you know, like the very fact that we're talking about white people is, you know, is only an American thing. Because yeah. go to Europe, and you live in Germany, Kevin. Do the Germans consider themselves the same as the Polish?
No.
Do they consider themselves the same as the Italians?
Nope.
The French?
Nope.
The English?
No.
But they're all white, Kevin.
True.
So why is it there in Europe, people understand more so the cultural differences that exist between people, whereas here we make it racial differences. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of that, like, there is no like American culture, really. You know, like, there is, but the American culture is sort of like pan everybody in America. And seeing as we don't have one real like base type of bloodline in America, it is that melting pot. You don't have a specific culture to a specific type of person here. And so the only way people are able to break it down upon is skin color. Well, you know, we listen to different music than the African Americans, and we put we don't leave our we don't leave Christmas lights up 365 days a year like the Hispanics, or we eat different foods and we do these things. And it's like, okay, so, but you know, like that's not something that's a race thing, or but there are aspects of culture that are put into those things. And the same thing where you are, you know, if you saw a Black person in Germany, if you ask them, like, well, you know, what do they recognize themselves to be, they would say, you know, Cameroon or Nigerian or Somalian or something like that, because again, it's a culture that they come from. And so, you know, I think largely now Europe has its own issues with that, because then it becomes truly, I mean, the Europeans really do look along bloodlines a lot of times and find the you know, it's like the Russians hate the Poles, and they hate the, you know, the Poles hate the you know, like the Slavs and the Germans. And I mean, you know, the Germans did invade a lot of people, so that doesn't help. The Russians also did invade a lot of people, so that didn't help too. And so, like, you know, the memories are sort of long, and bloodlines sort of matter a little bit more there. But the reality, when you really step back and look at it, where the big differences come from is that what we want to say is, like, in America, white, or in Europe, like claimed as like a European, as it were, is the remnants of Christendom, you know,
right.
And that's like the overarching thing that binds is belief. And now the faith is dying because, you know, sort of, but, and you know, other factors of the world. But the reality is that, like, the Christendom was what civilized the world. And where you see good aspects in other cultures is where Christendom has been allowed to come in, where the truth of our Lord, the truth of the Catholic faith, and everything that came in. And it is so culturally impactive that it leaves its finger even to this day, even for countries that have lost the faith hundreds of years ago, and even for people that have abandoned it as a society, and that it still has aspects that are in there. You know, when you read about, you know, Bishop Shanahan's journeys through Nigeria and converting the Nigerian continent, like, you get a picture of what real barbaric society looked like, and that was only in the 1800s. But then you realize all the good things that came to Nigeria and that still exist in Nigeria come from that influence of it's being made Christian, and that civilizing of it, you know, that, you know, because when Shanahan was there, he was dodging cannibals. So it's, you know, that's that, and people didn't wear clothes. And so, like, that's the world that they were in at that point in time. And the same thing you can do, you know, look at Mexico, the good things that exist in Latin America, anywhere in Latin America, come from the influence of Christianity on it. Before that, they were sacrificing children and slaves to gods, and they were, you know, doing all sorts of barbaric things. You know, it's the same everywhere you turn. And so that's when you really want to boil it down, like, that's where we need to find our the strength. We need to realize where the strength of our communal bonds really can come from is a strength in our faith. Now, that's not to say we treat other people wrongly, but that's where, if we wanted to break down along the lines, who you should spend time with more so than others, it should be because you believe the same more so than you look the same. So,
well, and I dare anyone to have a conversation with Father Ojeka or Bishop Nkamake or Father Okerulu or any of them and sit with them for 10 minutes and then tell me that you're superior. And Father Ojeka, I didn't all of them, but he just blows my mind every time I talk to him. It's like, oh my goodness, this is a very, very, very intelligent man. And it's just, that's what just, it's so simple. That it's like, it can't possibly be the color of their skin. I mean, he is way far into way, way above me in intelligence, in goodness. I mean, how could I possibly say that I am superior? And I think that it boil it down to that simple. You know, I mean, really think of someone like that, and there you go. St. Augustine was likely black, right? At least, I mean, he was from Africa, so, and maybe he wasn't. I guess there was a lot of different, you know, colonization back then too, so who knows? But I mean, I think it's a silly thing to think that just because of your skin that's
the issue. And when you look at the church and the faith has always been the great unifier. You know, I mean, you have St. Peter Claver going and offering himself to be enslaved so he could rescue and captive Negroes and baptize them and teach them the faith, things like that. You know, I mean, we're offering up his own freedom for slavery. That's who we canonize. You know, we canonize people who go and try to bring good to people no matter where they come from, who bring the faith, who bring virtue, who teach, who educate, who try to sacrifice for themselves to bring people who are less fortunate up. And race never factors into it. You know, it has nothing to do with that. And I remember reading a canon law study from the 1940s, I think, and it was about interracial marriage in the United States. And the church wasn't the one standing in the way of interracial marriage. It was the laws of the states that made it difficult. You know, some allowed it, some didn't, some were liable to persecution and fines and things like that. And it was the prejudice of the common man that stood in the way of these things, not the church. You know, that was why the priests were warned, hey, listen, you know, if you do have a couple that is, one is black and one is white that is coming to get married, you should warn them about the difficulties that they face. Not because difficulties from the church or the faithful, but difficulties from inside their own society that are going to look at that as negatively, or the fact that, yeah, there are cultural differences. You know, it's not because of their skin color, but there are differences in the way that they would have been raised. I mean, there's differences between me as an Irishman versus friends that I had in school that were Italian in Boston. You know what I mean? Like, that area still had a lot of that immigrant sort of structure where Italians spent more time with Italians and Irish spent more time with the Irish. Like, there's just differences in how you acted and how you spoke and how you were raised and taught things like that, because it was still had a tie to the old country a little bit there. And yeah, I mean, it was diminishing, but it was still there. And so it was, you know, that, like, yeah, there's going to be things that might be a little bit different about one person's house versus another, or the way that they act or the way that they talk. But all those things are like stuff that, or temperament. We all know that they're nationalistic temperaments. You know what I mean? That, you know, how many Italians do you know that aren't sanguine? You know,
so true. Well, it has me thinking, Father. You know, if I were to, obviously I'm married, but I'm just saying hypothetically, if I were to marry an American black woman or to marry a Southern Italian woman, I can tell you right now which culture would be more like mine. It is not the Southern Italian one. These people they're crazy. And but it's exactly, it's not skin color. And as you said, it's going to have an effect, but it's just such a silly thing to think, well, just because that's what you look like, that must be what you are. And that's
I think and the stuff now is just so reactionary too. It's like, because we've had shoved down our throats here for so long, this lie of that we as the average people in the United States are systemically racist, right? This lie has been just forced to eat that, you know, good. Let's, you know, everybody do their, you know, get down on a knee and apologize for being white, you know, because and recognize your own wickedness, and that it's such garbage, you know. And it's a narrative created by the powers that be to force a victim mentality on those minority communities. But now you end up, the other problem is you end up with this reactionary aspect where it's, you know, like, well, we're not saying that we don't like, or like Hispanics or Blacks or who, you know, insert race, you know, color here is bad, but it's that we should take pride and be like, mm-hmm. You know, I have white pride. What is that? Like, right. Again, point to what is identifiably white? Because even in skin color, it, you know, if I spend enough time outside, I'll look. You know, when I was in college, I and I'm an Irishman, don't forget, but when I was in college, I did landscaping, and I had people that were from Lebanon thought I was Lebanese, I was Middle Eastern, because I was brown as a berry. So, because I was going to, you know, at that point in time, sometimes I was going to Eastern Rites, and I knew a lot of Lebanese people. I'm like, oh, you must be from the Middle East. I'm like, yeah, Middle East of Dublin, maybe, but that's. So it's, you know, like, that's, you know, that, I mean, I've been, it's, so, like, it's not even a static thing. It's, you know, like, and so how can you be proud in something that has no definitive quality to itself, you know? Or, I mean, it's a pure accidental, and that's all it is. It has no substantive aspect to it at all. And it's reactionary to do that, to say, oh, now we need to be, you know, have this white pride or whatever, or, you know, like people, or we try to bring that up. You know, I look forward to all your angry emails, of course, by the way, as the disclaimer, as this show goes on. please scroll down if you'd like to see people call me both racist and not racist enough in the same comment section on this video. And I mean, that was the thing. It's like, you know, people have claimed that that in not ignoring the fact that race exists, you know, or that there are stereotypes, then, you know, somehow that makes me racist. But at the same time, by not giving into like saying like, oh, we need, you know, to be proud of being white, or we need to have like we need to stick with our own, as it were, like we need to be, you know, spend more time with our own, like this forced segregation, people assume that I'm for like forced integration at the same time. Like, oh, like you know, like somebody's like, well, how'd that work in Boston with the busing in the 80s? I'm like, I'm not telling you to, you have to like force people into groups that they don't want to be part of, and that group doesn't want them to be part of. I'm just saying, I'm also not saying that we have to forcibly keep them apart. How about you just let people spend time with people whom they appreciate, right, on their own? Like, I'm a white guy, and if you think that we should have this more forced separation of people, I don't want to spend time with you. So I'm just not going to. So I'd much rather spend time with the people who are from somewhere different and look a little different than I do, who appreciate me as a human being, and I can appreciate them as human beings. We could be decent, you know? And so like, that's adult. That's, you know, that's Christian. I mean, that's where virtue lies, because, you know, the number one thing about all of us that unites us all is that we're all human, and to be human means to have an immortal soul created in the image and likeness of God that is worth, each one is worth just as much in God's eyes, and each one whom he loves, and would die for them alone. And so if I'm not willing to imitate Christ in that approach towards that way of looking at men, then, you know, then I'm by that. That's the supernatural. So everything else is naturalistic.
And I had a conversation with the guy one time, and I guess maybe this was inappropriate, but I said, you know, I was reading the Bible the other day in the Beatitudes. I don't remember the blessed are the white, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I don't remember that being in the Bible. I mean, did Christ preach about that? Was he always saying that? Oh, yeah. Well, your race is what matters. So you're going to heaven, or you know, it's so silly. It's just eventually, it's like really. Do you really think that's how Christ would act?
Kevin, which has the greater possession of the page, the white parts or the black lettering?
Good question. Yeah. Right.
So
that's very philosophical. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, you can make arguments about that stuff all the time if you want to, but who wants to, you know, like that's just, like I said, at a certain point, we have to grow up. We have to realize that both sides of that coin, the idea that there is a racism or systemic racism problem is created, and the idea that we need to be like so reactionary, the opposite is a naturalistic created problem, which I mean, hello, there's your Hegelian conflict again. So it's
you know, always comes back.
Are you systemic racism, or are you gonna be proud in your individual races, you know, like, or how about we do neither of those things and act like just adults, you know, or like put a bunch of kids in the room, you know. Watch a bunch of 5-year-olds interact with each other. They aren't going to care what color of the skin of the other person is. You know, they might recognize it. They might point it out and say it because you don't ignore it. You know, everybody's got the story of the little kid saying some sort of uncomfortably racist thing in the grocery store or whatever, right? But the little kid doesn't mean anything negative by it. He just points out that somebody looks different. And you know, we've inserted our own, you know, like, oh, you can't say that, or oh, that's wrong to do, or that's negative, or whatever, you know. But in the child's mind, he doesn't think anything bad about it. He's just saying, oh, that person's black or that person's white, you know, like, that's different than me, and that's different from what I'm used to. But then if you let them just play together, they would just play. And then they're like, oh, why are you friends with Tommy? I'm friends with Tommy because he's really got a good sense of humor, and he knows and he likes the same games as I like to play, you know. So that's
absolutely no, Father. I think that sounds to me like a perfect place to end it, and I think you're absolutely right. I think there was a lot of wisdom as normal for this topic. That I think we'll see what YouTube does with it. I think there wasn't anything too controversial, but as you said, Father, we are undoubtedly going to get. You know, people in the comment section that are going to give us a hard time because for whatever reason, these people come out for these types of topics. But we hope that people learn from it. And we hope that in the end, again, be charitable, be Christ-like. Yeah. I mean, that's it. It's really that simple. And I'm really, really, really sure that Christ would not be racist. I'm pretty confident in that. So,
yeah. And you know, all you commenters that are going to leave your nasty comments, you know, just letting you know, I will just so cry myself to sleep tonight because, you know, I'm just so offended by what you say.
He will. Father is a very easily emotionally upset person. But no, absolutely. Father, as always, I so greatly appreciate you coming on and discuss these things. We hope to continue doing it, to continue talking about, yeah, things that are in the news and I suppose things that just matter, at least to me, they do. I greatly appreciate it. If anyone else did, please like, share, subscribe, comment, though we prefer no crazy comments, but if they're going to come, then, well, at least you non-crazy people, please give us some good comments too to balance it out
a little bit
so the father doesn't cry. We don't want Father crying in his bed tonight or whenever we publish this. So please comment nice things as well. And Father, until next time, God bless you.
God bless you too.